Welcome to the seminar series, Interactions Between Clients and Professionals, hosted by Cesar. In this podcast, Cesar's doctoral students speak with internationally recognized scholars in social work and interview them about their personal journey toward becoming a scholar in social work. I ask them about contributions, challenges, and regrets. In today's episode, Sven Heste will tell us about his journey to becoming a social work scholar. He's interviewed by Stina Lindegren, doctoral student at CSAR at Uppsala University.
Okay, welcome everybody to this interview with Sven Heste. And so I give the word to you, Sven, to introduce yourself to the audience first.
Well, I've done this sometimes before, and now I am 80, which gives me another view of myself than when I was 79, I can tell you that. And the book where Stina, from which Stina is going to ask me questions is, is already 5 years old, so I've been working very much during the last days to find out who am I by going backwards. I have not at least about six different parts of my life where I decided both to quit my music and to go back to it. So my music, what I've done, has followed me all over the years. I started as a rock and roll musician in the 1950s, and then I went on to play with all the bands, dancing all over. Imagine that in our times now, that there was so much dancing and singing in Sweden by then. We are back in the 50s. And then I played with much better, so I could be a professional musician in any band, long time, even in the 60s and 70s when I wrote my Swedish as author and composer, my music and jazz music, and I was touring around on the summers. So my last tour so far before I went out to study, really, was when I met my becoming wife. And that was in the 70s. So since then, we have a family, and now I start working with music again. So I could say I've never stopped music, but suddenly I understood that I had to make a decision. So the decision was to make a professional academic career came in the 1980s, in fact. Well, let's stop there. I don't want to monopolize this interview too much. You better ask me, Stina.
Yeah. Okay, so the first question is, in which field do you think you made the biggest contribution?
That is a very difficult question to answer. I think after having reflecting upon this during the last days, I think it is when I started scientific journal, International Journal of Social Welfare. It started as Scandinavian Journal of Social Welfare back in the 80s. So, I mean, it's, I thought I have double aim with that. One aim was that I would give, I would give the doctoral candidates, doctoral students, somewhere to publish articles in Sweden in for the international world. And nobody in Sweden by then were so much skillful in writing scientific articles in our subject, at least. So I thought this is something for us to present social work in the world internationally. So we ran courses in that and so on. And suddenly some students came about and wrote articles and became PhD in scientific article writings. So, after the, well, about the, I think it's, it was 1999 when we changed the editorial board very much. And then we understood that we had to change from Scandinavian journal to international journal because it became popular internationally. So to make a story shorter than it should be, I left it in the middle of 2014, I think it. I left the journal because it became, it abandoned the paper publishing. And it's a beautiful journal. But that you cannot see, but you can download the articles as you may have done now. But I couldn't stand the journal having only being published through the internet. Anyway, when I finished my job there, the journal had became one of the 10 most important journals in the world, in our social science, in social science. So I was very proud about that. And the interesting thing is that I presented the journal for the doctor's students to publish. And it became so difficult to publish in our journal that no Swedish PhD candidate could publish articles in it, except Marita Jakobsson, who was publishing. So now it has become less important, maybe, because it has going down the ladder. It's very much investigated how important scientific journals are nowadays, and maybe it has fallen down a little, but not much. It's still an important journal. I still think they are writing very interesting international articles in our journal. So to your question, I would say this, I think that was the most important thing I did, if that was a question.
Yeah. It was. Thank you.
Could that be shorter?
No, I think we have a half an hour left, so
all right.
There are not too many questions.
Okay.
So my next question is, what does social work mean to you professionally?
Wow. Very much, I should say, because I started as a psychologist. My doctorate thesis was about following group psychotherapy patients during a 2-year period and the change of their unconscious defense mechanism. How about that? Would you understand that make statistical investigation of the change of the psychological defense. And that I started as a psychologist on the inside of the human. And then I took a step out of that and went out in the world and came back and understood that, well, my world was I've been always going in and out from university and out in the practice. So I went from university studies to work with heavy addicts in Långbro sjukhus, that is a hospital. I was responsible for the most heavy drug addicts in Stockholm by that from Långbro sick hospital. And I was responsible for a ward which had a therapeutic community for this. So it was very dynamic, I would say. And after 2 years there, I was invited to go to, in Sweden by then, a famous village, namely Barnbyn Skå, children's village at Skå. Do anyone listening to this know about Barnbyn Skå? Skå Gustav Jonsson was a very famous leader of that. And then they invited me to go there, and I went there. So, and it was, you know, living with psychosocial vulnerable families, the poorest families in Sweden. There was very, well, exciting is not the best word for it, but I learned a lot by doing that. So, and I was a psychologist there and a researcher. But how did I become a professor in social work? Well, by then there were, it's so long time ago, so we're only a handful of professors, in fact, in social work, and they came from different subjects. Harald Sveene was the first one. He came from sociology, after all. And Bengt Börjesson became in Umeå the first professor there, and he's a psychologist, as I am. And there are some sociologists. By then, there was no social work attendant to the searcher for these positions. So I went from the inner world of the human beings into to the outer world of sociologists, you can say. And I went out very much. So what can I say more? Stina, help me.
Well, I can ask another question, a follow-up question to this, because as you mentioned, you have a background as a clinical psychologist. What kind of influence do you think this has had on your research, or in what way it might have impacted your research?
That I come from a psychologist point of view to a more sociologist point of view, is that the question, or social work maybe? You know, social work is connected to both. The two of them, I was, as you know, coming from Stockholm, where all the teachers are representing different subjects, economics, politics, political science, sociology, and everything. So, I mean, the mix of it, I love that. I think it's very important that you. We have a stuprörstänkande that we don't like anymore, that we have to collaborate. And I've been working with in the field with clinical, with family, quite a lot. And by then, when I was starting working there, there were three representatives taking care of the children. A psychologist, a doctor, and a social worker working together. And sometimes it was a social worker who was a boss, sometimes it was a psychologist, and sometimes a doctor. But now it's all gone. I don't know, it's just the whole bloody discipline has been medicalized. and they don't like social work anymore. So the doctors, medicine doctors, are taking the commando in, I found out, in our country. Maybe in other countries too, I don't know. So is that a good answer to your question or not?
Yeah, yes. So I can go on to the next question. What major obstacles have you faced in your career?
Yeah, what can I say for that? That is something challenging you or stopping you, or is that it? What do you want to know?
Yeah. If there's been anything special during all these years that have been the most obstacles for you?
Yeah, well, we're talking about in Sweden, I guess. In Sweden, the challenge for me, who decided to go outside the border of Sweden to become international, it was a very important decision because nobody did that, in fact, so much. And I thought we were so much focusing on our Swedish Scandinavian thing that we didn't see the international part of it might be even more important than we thought of. And I found out through many traveling, for instance, to Japan, I've been to Japan 6 or 7 times, that Sweden, what we're doing in Sweden is more visible from a strange vision, a strange point of view. If you're in Japan, nothing is more close to you than Sweden, in fact. It likes to be a paradox, but I start my answer to your question by that. In Sweden, one thing, obstacle is that people were start coming migration to Sweden. The people I met said that why do they? Well, the only thing that matters here is the Swedish welfare system. Why do they come? We have our own engagement, upbuilding of the welfare state system, and so on. So you better go home to your own country. We are doing well in our country as we have it here. It's something closing down the borders by saying that, I think. And we now, when I'm 80, I feel a little depressed over the development what we are facing now. And well, so it is. That's the first thing. The second issue to answer your question is that I have been fighting with the roots in Barnbyn school, the children's village, that taking away children from families is dangerous because the child carries the family inside. And if you are too much involved in stealing children from biological families, you might do something to the child that is making him even worse and more problematic, because the child has a double problematic situation, both longing for its family, biological family, doesn't matter if it's poor or drinking or whatever they are doing, the child will not forget them anyhow. And so you have a challenge there. It was this is what an inheritance from the old Barnbyn school that I carried on to different parts of the world, I must say. I became famous over doing things. My first real trip outside was to Australia, where we stayed 1 week to handle these questions. Next stop was in San Francisco, right in the middle of the San Francisco, 1989, was destroyed by a catastrophe. And 2 months from that, I came back as a Fulbright senior professor researcher in San Francisco, in Berkeley. So that was the start of the International Journal of Social Welfare, anyhow. But I think every country has its own thinking about how to take care of their child or children. And we have to consider that. I've been abroad in so many countries and so many cultures that taking a child from a family in one culture means a help, and in another country it's disastrous. Well, this is for me problematic now, because I can make up a lecture out of it, because it's so important, so important. We started even, you know, when we noticed that in the 80s or something, wasn't it? When I was working at Barnbyn School, we noticed that the family section in Stockholm were so monopolizing the idea that they take the children out of the family and give it as a gift, so to say, to parents that have no children. So that was a fight we had. We started an organization called RFFR, Riksförbundet för Familjers Rättigheter, Rights of the Family. And we organized those families that had lost their children into foster care. So it was a very strong organization by then. I don't know if it exists now, but this was, you know, a really action-oriented organization, I can tell you, with the people who decided in that organization had their children been taken away, and they were organizing so much. And our research from Barnbyn School was focusing on that question, in fact. So that is my answer to your question. There are two things that I've been fighting within, which is an obstacle and very big challenge all over the world. And you have to consider, when you go out, the different sociocultural context that you meet. Important.
Yeah, thank you. Can you give some examples of what it might look like in those different contexts or countries, and the things that might influence how these questions are managed about children and having them staying in their families or taking them to foster care, and what kind of factors might influence these decisions in different countries?
Well, I can give you many examples, but Japan is always very good to have as an example. I've been there many times and been studying and been doing research with the Japanese child welfare researchers. Now, when we were so happy that we had developed such social work towards children in Sweden, We were happy that, well, we could, some people could show that this was a successful project. In Japan, we could show it because it was different from United States, for instance. In United States, the discussion is child abuse, which is something else than children at risk, which is something else. Child abuse, and then you are talking about grown-up that are putting bad things over them, whatever it is, spanking them and all that. Rick Bart, who's coming to us, or will be part of this, he's expert. Was the first one I met in the United States when I was there. But so, first of all, we have that kind of difference between child abuse and children at risk. Then we're talking about these things in Japan. There are very, very few children in care, out of home care. Why is that? Because this is something they cannot do against a family. It's important that someone, strange person, whatever he might be, cannot enter a family and take a child away. And if you do that, you cannot put it in another family, because that is even worse, you know. But the children in Japan are put in institutions. First of all, there are very few. And secondly, they are the institutions, the number of institutions are very few. Secondly, they are very much connected to the psychiatric centers that are very close to the family, in the family surrounding. Wherever you go in Japan, there is a center where you can go and discuss with someone about it's about the old PBU centers in Sweden, something like that. So, and they will not go home to people. Never they can think of a social worker going home to a family and pay a visit and say, oh, hello, I'm Sven Hesler. I want to take a look. We heard your neighbors are telling us that your children are at risk or something like that. Would never be done in Japan. At least when I don't know now, but when we went, made our investigations there, then it was like that, yeah. You want more examples?
No, I think that's good, a very interesting example from Japan. I think we can move on to my final question, which is, how do you see on the challenges of social work, and how do you look at the future of social work?
The challenges and the future. There are lots of challenges. And I think you will discuss these with more important people than I am. I know, for instance, Lena is the one in our among us, Lena in Great Britain, UK. Wherever she is doing something, writing about something, now it is the challenges she sees, which is probably what we are going to face in the future. And that she's now doing very much on both on green social work for instance. And then on catastrophes, green social work, we should find a way to catastrophe or, well, it's nearly every day is some kind of catastrophe. I don't know if it's overheating and the ices are melting and or cold. It's social workers should be involved in it. That's what I'm saying. I'm convinced that we have to be involved in these questions, which are, it's a way of surviving, I would say, for the people. I would say also that I'm so glad that I stopped with developed myself within social work, because it contains, as we have seen, so many different ways of developing for people, for other people. So I mean, it's and the best way to find out how much you like it is to go abroad to another country. I've been so much out in the world that I'm glad that someone recognizes me in Sweden, anyhow, at least in my family. But I've learned so much by doing that. And I can tell you that we have, with my department in Stockholm, have a connection and agreement to work together with Berkeley, the School of Social Work. And that was a very important decision. I hope they are doing well on that. And I think that my ambition and goal and, you know, wishing for CSR is that you open the doors for the world to be inspired of. You're easier to be inspired by something which is strange, that's something that you are familiar with. You can either look for something that you recognize, which is familiar to your thought, or something which I'm a more curious person. I am very interested in strange things. I'm not afraid of that. I think many people are afraid of strange situations, like being in Sweden with all those inhabitants. We scientists know that a society with differences or different cultures together becomes a more competent society than a homogenic one. So I'm not afraid of differences. That is what I'm, that's for me now. I don't know about what you think about that, Stina.
Seems interesting. We shouldn't be so afraid to investigate the strange and the different. Mm. Thank you so much. I think that I will leave the word to Marita.
Yes, I just wonder if it's someone who wants to ask another question to Sven Hessler. I just wonder, Sven, you have so much experience of being abroad and working with social issues, and you have many contacts and so. And just wondered, do you see any problems with international contacts? And when you have been abroad and working with social work, do you make follow-ups and have contacts, or what's the backside of working with social issues abroad?
Well, I must say, I'm 80, but when we started this, I had very much connections and collaborations with my fellow in the styrelse. Those governing international Federation of Social Workers. I was, you know, following the all these for this yearly annual meetings every second year, all those big organizations meet for a common meeting and discuss what's going on now, what's the future, and so on. And these meetings are more important than you think. It's not only just to say hello, how are you today? It's more about where are we going with our subject. So I've been in many of these international meetings. I think it's every second year they meet, International Journal of Social. International Federation of Social Workers, International Association Council of Social Work, and International Association of Social Work Schools. Yeah, the school organizations. And in different, of course, in different countries. And that is a very good start. I was a long time since I've been there, but when I was there, I got to know all these people that I have been touring around with. Lena Dominelli and I, for instance, we started together with Canada, Holland, and Great Britain and Sweden. A group that were visiting each other, and they came to Stockholm also. And I was in Canada. Well, three universities in Canada. And we discussed what kind of family policy and social work, family social work, do you run in your country? So we met and discussed that, and you know, brought up specialists. So we were in Tensta, Stockholm, for instance, where all these people came, and they could see how it is in our suburbs. And we went to, well, to United States and different parts in Canada and Great Britain and Holland. That was a very important meeting for us, all of us, because we were all sorts of disciplines meeting, and it was all about social work and social welfare with families, children and families. And I recognize also that when I was in Berkeley, the department in all countries are called different because they are different. Related and organized. So it's called social welfare. The department is in social welfare, and it's in different parts of the world. That word is becoming more common. Why? Yeah, well, it seems that having the welfare concept into social work, it means that you can discover new things. For instance, within child welfare, and you say child welfare and mean it, then you can add to the when the child is abused, you can add the context where the child is living. And they have developed quite a lot of research about that, not only the child and the family, but the family's context also, which is legislation and policy and everything in that country. So now we have someone taking care of this. And I know some very interesting person who is running this comparison between different countries on the child welfare concept in that wider meaning, in fact. So I would like to invite her to some kind of conference with you, because that's very interesting. You can look at any country and you might see how the child lives and how the country responses are on the abused or rejected children in that kind of country. It's quite an advanced thing. Now I'm spoiling your time by developing my own thoughts, but it's only my recommendation. So
thank you. Is it someone else who wants to ask something?
I think I should be shorter, don't you
think? We can say that you see very much contributions with working internationally, and you don't see so much problems with this. And I also think that the family perspective and the child perspective is central for you, as well as social psychology perspective.
Mm.
If I will make a short conclusion. Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Sven. And then I think we can talk Swedish again. And då tänker jag att vi avslutar. Vi tar en liten kort paus nu på en kvart.
Och sen Clara has a question. I had a question, I think.
Yes, Clara? I didn't
see. Yeah, if it's okay. Shortly, I thought it was so interesting in your paper where you wrote about the unexpected discoveries and how social workers were traumatized post-war in a way that you didn't know. So I just wondered if you could expand a little bit on that and say something about how you dealt with that and what consequences it had for the re-establishment of social work post-war.
In Bosnia?
Yeah.
This is the article, isn't it? Well, yeah, I would like to, because it's, you know, the war had a pause, I would say, well, ended, or decision-making, peace decision, just before Christmas, 1970, well, I don't remember now. 1994, anyway, it was before Christmas, exactly. It was in December. So, and I was sitting as a professor at Stockholm University, which is it is Stockholm University, but in other localities that we are situated now. And there was someone from UNICEF calling me and saying, well, now they bombed Sarajevo totally and the university is crashed. We want you to come down and help us. But the most important thing is that we help those children that lost their parents during the war. Well, I'm sitting here, I have some things here I'm putting down and we are moving away, and I better ask my wife first. So when we came back, she said, absolutely, you must do it. So when she came back after Christmas Eve, I called them and said, okay, we come. You know, I put together two colleagues, two very good teachers, and we went down and they to Sarajevo, you know, and it was so many voluntary organizations, NGOs, INGOs, you know, taking care of the peace process for the people. And in Sarajevo, you know, you couldn't imagine how much it was destroyed. They had people shooting at the inhabitants from the mountains surrounding Sarajevo. Have you been in Sarajevo? I mean, it's, it was crazy, but we could live in a small apartment where the woman who needed money moved out of her bedroom, and we invaded her bedroom while being there in that crashed city, the beautiful Sarajevo. So we started there and saw that every windows were crashed, and in the winter it was. So we had a meeting with UNICEF, and it so happened that's interesting when considering what we have talked about earlier today, that no child was abandoned. Every child was living with the grandmother, grandfather. No foster home at all. So they were taken care of within the extended family. You see, that makes a difference. But there were, in England, we know in London, for instance, that they sent school classes out in the rural areas. But this was for us a surprise, and UNICEF, of course, and we had to start new projects there. We found out that there were lots of social workers. What they told us, the few professors that didn't leave Sarajevo and went to Sweden, 74,000 went to Sweden, 74 from Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia. So there were at least five professors who went to Sweden, for instance. Well, those were left there. They told us when we came, this can be long, you know, because it's not so feelings coming up through my heart. Now, they said, well, why do you come so late? Why do you come so late? Well, we couldn't, you know, there are people who shoot you. You have been in war. Yeah. Now you took in all our resources to Sweden, and we have no resources left. For instance, no teachers here, and so on. So we had to reconstruct the whole social work education and started in Sarajevo. And what they said was that we lost during these years, we lost lots of knowledge. Please help us. I think we made up something like 20 seminars or whatever courses. And we put them into the course at the coast of Croatia. The Croatia was the winning country because they had the Adriatic Sea close to. The losing country was not so much Bosnia and Herzegovina, but maybe Serbia, because they lost nearly everything, even contact with the Adriatic Sea. So, I mean, they went out, they tried to be winners, but they came out as losers. And we, in fact, arranged with therapy for those soldiers that were coming home from war and didn't have a success to show. And the most complicated thing we had to meet was that there were three important religions, creation there, which were in the fight together. You know, they came either they were Catholic, Greek Catholic, or the other kind of Catholic they were. And different religions they were carrying. So they were sort of starting a movement with the people. So the Serbian people, they went from Sarajevo to Banja Luka. There were 10,000 or 100,000 of people went to Banja Luka. They were not prepared to receive them. Others went to other parts of former Yugoslavia. So I don't need to go into details. So we can leave it for me and for myself, okay?